Coffeehouse Shots is sponsored by Look Forward, the podcast from Rathbones on what the future might look like. Find out more at rathboneslookforward.com.
Hello and welcome to Coffeehouse Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Kate Andrews. We've just heard from the Chancellor at the Daily Government press conference and he had an update on the Prime Minister's health. James, it seemed to be promising news.
Yes, it is definitely much more encouraging news than we had yesterday. The Prime Minister is sitting up in bed and engaging with his medical team. And just talking to those who know him well today, I sense that people are, no one thinks that the Prime Minister is out of the woods yet, but I think that people are more optimistic about his condition. Certainly the news since he went into intensive care has, I think, been more positive.
And Kate, away from the update on the Prime Minister's progress from the intensive care unit he's in, we heard from the Chancellor on new measures in terms of the economy. They relate to a sector which so far hadn't been included and there had been complaints about.
Yeah, so today the Chancellor announced a £750 million scheme for the charity sector. That money is to be divided between small local charities working with vulnerable people and charities that are providing essential services. So some examples that he gave were St. John Ambulance and the Citizens Advice Bureau. Now, these charities have always had access to bigger government schemes like the job retention scheme. They were in a position to get some of their, or potentially all of their employees' salaries up to 80% covered. But the charity sector itself had not been mentioned. And many people were saying, you know, why are bigger businesses on the government's mind and not the charity sector? So the Chancellor did address that today. And look, it will be very meaningful for these charity sectors. We've already had some reports that certain organizations were going to have to roll back the funding of medical research like cancer research because they were really worried about their donations coming in. So, you know, this will definitely be providing some level of support. I think there will be some questions today, however, as to why the business loan scheme and the job retention scheme, those two real centerpieces of the Chancellor's coronavirus policies and legislation, weren't really mentioned in a meaningful way because there have been some hiccups. Small businesses in particular are struggling to get access to these loans. Very few have actually gotten them in the past few weeks. And also around the job retention scheme today, we learned that it could be up to three times more expensive than the Treasury originally predicted. So there have been some question marks about this policy. I don't think anyone expects them to get it exactly right. But the fact that those were mostly glossed over in the press conference today will probably leave a lot of people wanting a bit more.
I think one of the particular challenges for the charitable sector is that they don't want to furlough their frontline staff because the demand for their services is high. And once staff are furloughed, they're not allowed to work. And I think that is part of what makes the charity sector, I mean, and obviously that and the fact it relies on donations, kind of unique at this moment in the crisis.
James, when the Chancellor was asked about the job retention scheme, which Kate just touched on, and the fact that it could cost the government a lot more than they had perhaps expected, Rishi Sunak seemed to suggest that was actually a good thing and a sign that the scheme was working.
Yeah, his argument was the scheme is designed to ensure that people remain in work and don't become unemployed. So if more businesses choose to access it, that is a good thing. Now, that argument is certainly logically true. If you are trying to avoid the kind of economic scarring that comes from people being laid off, the more businesses access this scheme, the better that is. I think the question coming down the track is, as Kate said, it makes the scheme more expensive. Now, the scheme was originally set out to last for 3 months, but with the Treasury making very clear that they were prepared to extend it if necessary. I think if the take-up of the scheme has been as large as people suggest, it is going to add to the pressure to get back to some kind of normality within the next 3 months.
The major payoff of this scheme may come when we're actually out of the woods. The idea behind the job retention scheme is that if you can keep as many people employed as possible, they can return to work on day one, and that will help to kickstart the economy, which has been hibernating. And a lot of economists, a lot of politicians are still hoping for that V-shaped curve where growth declined rapidly, but it also bounces back quite rapidly. So some of the benefits of it we may not get to see until things actually look slightly more normal. But I do think that a lot of the assumptions around the packages put together in the UK are now starting to be challenged. They really wanted to mitigate that rapid economic downturn, and we are seeing a major contraction in the economy. There are some estimates now that this could actually start to resemble something like the Great Depression, going back to the early 1900s. We're not there yet, but it looks like we could be on our way. So the extent to which these countless of billions of pounds now are actually mitigating the economic damage is becoming more of a question.
James, you mentioned the idea that lockdown could end perhaps in the next 3 months if there is enough pressure on the government, or perhaps a factor they would have to take into consideration. When the prospect of lockdown easing and end to lockdown was raised at today's press conference, we got what has now become quite a predictable response from whoever the minister is for the government that day, the idea that this is not the focus right now, and actually all focus should be on ahead of the peak, trying to do what you can to reduce that and make sure everyone is prepared. But is there any indication elsewhere today or generally about when the government is going to be considering this? Rishi Sunak mentioned a COBRA meeting.
So look, I think it is almost certain that the lockdown, is going to be extended from the 3 weeks that it was announced, when Boris Johnson announced it in that televised address to the country. I think that is a given. I think how much longer the lockdown goes on is a different question and a matter of debate within government. Now, Number 10's argument is publicly discussing when the lockdown would end is not only kind of getting off the agenda, but kind of positively counterproductive. They will tell you rather exasperatedly that public discussions of that will mean that the number of people kind of complying with social distancing will fall because people will feel that these restrictions are about to go. But I think set against that, I think businesses and individuals need some sense of where this is going. And my hunch is that if this week beginning on Easter Sunday is the peak, and then if by the end of the month we begin to see a considerable drop in the number of deaths, then I think there will begin to be some pressure for an easing of the lockdown. I think that'll be particularly true if those European countries like Austria and Denmark that have set out their kind of route out of a lockdown, if they manage to do that without a second wave of the virus coming back, then I think public opinion could shift quite quickly. I think it is worth remembering that public opinion kind of pushed the government into the lockdown. When Boris Johnson addressed the country on that Monday night, there were public calls kind of, come on, we need a lockdown. And I think you could see that in reverse if you see lots of European countries managing to successfully exit from their lockdowns. I think you could see people beginning to say, come on, we need to ease off our restrictions too.
And Kate, when we do eventually get out of lockdown, whenever that is, it's not going to be all plain sailing. Did we get any indication today at the press conference of how the Chancellor sees the coming months and the general economic recovery?
They're playing their cards fairly close to their chest on that front. The Chancellor has mentioned in the last two press conferences that he's done, he's hinted anyway, that all of the spending will have to be paid back. It is clearly on his mind, and he's easing the public into that harsh reality that all of the spending, all of these packages do eventually have a price tag attached to them. We just don't know what it is yet. We do know it's going to be colossal. It's a decade's worth of effort to get the UK's finances in order after the financial crash, wiped out in a matter of weeks, really. But no, very little indication at the moment as to what their plans are to tackle that. The Chancellor today, in relationship to the lockdown, made very clear he wants to be in the here and now. He wants to talk about the present. So if he's not interested or not willing to talk about lockdown details, granted, I'm sure they don't know much about them anyway, in a week or two's time, they're certainly not going to be talking about how they get the economy back on track and very importantly, how they get public finances back on track.
Now, Rishi Sunak left us with this thought when he ended the press conference.
And if I could conclude by saying this, our economic plan and the plan for charities that we announced today are built on one simple idea, that we depend on each other. Thank you.
James, is this a different type of language than what we'd normally expect to hear from a Conservative politician?
I think it was a reminder of how this crisis is catalysing the shift to a kind of more communitarian conservatism. But this shift had been underway for quite some time. If you think back to David Cameron's Big Society. You think back to the kind of Tory messages under Boris Johnson about, you know, the relentless emphasis on the One Nation message, which Rishi Sunak today changed to a kind of One Society message. But I think it does tell you something about how different the country is going to be after the crisis. And I think this is one of the challenges. This is a shared experience for the country. Like nothing that, you know, I think I'm the oldest, but Paul Rank could declare that I'm the oldest person on this podcast. But this is something, this is a national experience like we none of us have experienced in our lifetimes. You know, I think that, yes, it is obviously not a war in that, you know, there are bombs dropping on London and Liverpool and Glasgow, but we are all going through the same shared national experience. And I think the challenge for politicians on the right is that often moments like that are followed by a shift to the left. And I think what you see in the way that they are trying to talk is the Tories, who are obviously ultimately the most pragmatic. I mean, the reason they are the longest running and most successful political party in the Western world is that they are so pragmatic. They're trying to kind of get ahead of that shift. They're trying to present themselves, you know, as Boris Johnson might say, you know, we put an arm around every worker in the United Kingdom. And I think what they're trying to do is to use this to kind of chart their push to a kind of more one nation Conservative Party. Now, that obviously, that kind of one nation conservatism is not incompatible with the free market. But what I think it does mean is there's going to be a much bigger emphasis on shared national institutions than there were before. Nigel Lawson said that it had become a kind of national religion. And I think that statement might have been an exaggeration when he said it in his memoirs. I think that is now undoubtedly true. I think this is going to be a different kind of conservatism, a conservatism that is less individualistic perhaps than the Toryism of the 1980s, but is perhaps less exercised by shrinking the state than it had been previously. And I think also with a greater sense of the nation and society than before. I think, you know, this is an attempt to say that we have all gone through this together, and I think this is an attempt to kind of try and create a kind of new political pitch for a country that has gone through this common experience.
Kate, do you agree with that?
I think the Conservatives are going to have a very tough time balancing two things. One is exactly what James just said so eloquently, the fact that there's going to be a real coming together in society, a fact that people are going to want to know their neighbors quite literally better, who they've been spending every moment next to for weeks, possibly months, the fact that we're going to want to celebrate so many of these people who were considered to be low-skilled just mere months ago and are now key workers in society. There's a real rebalancing going on here in terms of not just the economy, but our perspective of how people contribute to the economy that people will want to see reflected. But they're going to have to balance that with the fact that you actually now have to pay back all of the money you just spent. And it's going to require doing things that aren't particularly politically popular. The banks are actually providing huge support this time around in the crash. They're not the cause of it. In many ways, they're going to be a huge part of the solution. You can't go around having your same common enemies that you had 10 years ago. Business is going to have to be hugely profitable, and we know the best way to do that is through market mechanisms. It's that profit that will turn into tax revenue that will actually pay this back. And the Conservatives, for quite some time now, and I'd say especially under Boris Johnson, have been a little bit nervous to actually bring some of those ideas into practice. Yes, the Prime Minister talks about the merit of markets, but everything we saw before coronavirus with his big mandate, like bailing out failing industries and committing to grandstanding rail projects, may not fit in with what you actually need to do to get the economy back on track. And they haven't been making those critical arguments around how you raise money, how you fund public services, as well as they should have been for quite some time now. So how they go about balancing the new feel in public sentiment with what has to be done to make sure that we can all continue to live the lifestyles that we're accustomed to is going to be difficult, and it remains to be seen how they perform that balancing act.
Thank you, Kate. Thank you, James.
Coffeehouse Shots is sponsored by the Rathbones Look Forward podcast. Join the world's leading thinkers, writers, and scientists discussing the future of our ever-changing world. In the latest episode, historian Tom Holland talks to broadcaster Andrea Catherwood on the future of morality. Find out more at rathbonesLookForward.com.